and welcome back to Undisclosed. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
So, who was the last person to see Haemin Lee alive other than her murderer? And who was the last person Adnan spoke to on the night that Hay disappeared? And finally, who was the person who said this in the teaser at the end of the first episode of Serial and then was never heard from again?
Coming up this season on Serial.
Basically threatened me, like, you know what happened to Hay, this is what's going to happen to you. That's how I felt that day.
In this episode of Undisclosed, Toward Justice, we're doing a deep dive into all things to Kara and Anne.
Who is the last person to see Haemin Lee alive other than her killer? Quite clearly, this is a central question to solving the mystery of her murder. And unfortunately, there's no shortage of options out there, each with their own consequence they bring to consideration of this case. So let's start with Adnan's two murder trials. At those trials, the prosecution postulated that the last person to see Hay alive was Inez Butler. Inez was a teacher and the athletic trainer at Woodlawn High School, which Adnan and Hay attended. Now, as with many witnesses in this case, Inez didn't tell solely one story. But the gist that ties together her varying versions is always tied to one key event, the Woodlawn wrestling match that supposedly took place on January 13, 1999, the day that Hay disappeared. In Inez's first police statement on February 1, 1999, she told the police that Hay told her on January 13 that she was upset and having problems at home. Inez also alleged that Hay said as a result of these problems, she wanted to contact her father in California. And then finally, Inez told the police that Hay was the manager of the wrestling team and that she told her she would not be attending the wrestling match that day. By the time of Inez's testimony at trial, this claim changed. Specifically, Inez testified that she saw Hay shortly after the end of school, about 2:20 p.m. According to Inez, Hay drove her car quickly to the front of the gym lobby, jumped out of her car, left her car running, grabbed some snacks, and told Inez to make sure the wrestling team wouldn't leave without her because she would be back.
So which was it? Would Hay be back for the wrestling match or not? Well, as you might recall, Sarah Koenig thought she had answered this question in Episode 9 on the Serial podcast. This takes us to the second possible last innocent person to see Haemin Lee alive other than her killer, Summer. Like Hay, Summer was a manager on the wrestling team. And after listening to Serial and hearing that State's theory was that Hay was dead at Best Buy by 2:36 p.m., Summer reached out to Sarah Koenig, and this is what she told her.
I talked to a woman named Summer. She went to Woodlawn. She's been listening to the podcast. And she emailed me because when she heard this one part, she said she started shaking her head. She said, if the state is saying Hay Lee was dead by 2:36...
It's impossible. It's impossible. I mean, it's just impossible. It's not... There's no way that she was at Best Buy at 2:36.
Summer was friends with Hay. Not close friends, but they had a class together and they joked around and talked. Summer had a boyfriend who did sports at Woodlawn, and she wanted an excuse to stay after school, too, so she could hang around with them. Hay told her there was an opening for another manager of the boys' wrestling team. Hay was already doing that, so Summer joined her. The day Hay disappeared, the wrestling team had a match at Randallstown High School. Summer remembers talking to Hay after school in the gym area there. The wrestlers were milling around. Summer was preparing the equipment they had to load onto the bus. And Hay came in to say, I'm not getting on the bus to the match, but I'll see you there. And that wasn't welcome news to Summer. She needed Hay by her side at the match because Hay was more experienced at scoring, which can be tricky in wrestling if you're new at it.
You know, I was giving her hell because I'm telling her, like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I needed her because, you know, we had to take points and things like that. And she's like, no, I just have to go and, you know, pick my little cousin up.
Summer says it wasn't a quick conversation either.
You know, we used to tease each other because she really was hilarious. But we would tease each other and, you know, go back and forth. And we were at least talking for at least 10 minutes.
You're sure that this is the day because it's the day she didn't show up?
I'm positive. Yeah. I am positive. I'm very positive.
So was Summer the last innocent person to see Hay alive? If so, as Sarah Koenig noted on Serial, Summer places her 10-ish minute talk with Hay at around 2:30 or 2:45 p.m., meaning she would have seen Hay until about 2:40 or 2:55 p.m., destroying the state's crime timeline. Because if Summer saw Hay at school until 2:40 or even 2:30, there's no way that Hay is dead at the Best Buy by 2:36. And as Summer said, she was positive this talk transpired on the day Hay disappeared. But if this case has taught us anything, it's that memory is fallible. And unless either Inez or Summer are confabulating events from one day into another, they're not remembering the day that Hay disappeared. Why? Well, as you might recall, all the way back in episode 2 of Undisclosed, we debunked both of these stories. Because, well, Woodlawn didn't have a wrestling match on January 13th, 1999.
So I started looking into it, and after reviewing some old newspaper clippings at the Baltimore Public Library, it turned out that there wasn't a wrestling match that evening. And that's right. The wrestling match, which has been part of the state's narrative since 1989, and was even accepted as gospel in Serial, actually never happened. There was no wrestling match on January 13th, 1999.
So, no wrestling match, meaning both Inez and Summer have the wrong day. But if both Inez and Summer are wrong, then who was the actual last innocent person to see Hay alive?
I've always postulated the answer as Becky. Becky was a friend of both Adnan and Hay, and she was in the same AP psychology class as the two of them that was the last class of the day, ending at final bell at 2:15 p.m. Here's how I talked about Becky back in the Undisclosed podcast.
Becky had two versions. One, in her police statement, she says she sees Adnan and Hay walking in opposite directions, and Hay says to Adnan, "Oh, I can't give you a ride. I have something else to do." And Adnan says, "Oh, that's okay. I'll just ask someone else." At trial, defense counsel called Becky as a defense witness and asked for a recollection. Again, she recalled seeing Hay at about 2:20 p.m. She's walking to the door that leads to her car, and according to Becky, Hay says to her, "I have to leave right away. There's somewhere I need to be." Doesn't say where the somewhere is. So at trial, we don't have Adnan mentioning the conversation. It's tough to say whether this was an oversight or some type of decision that was made by defense counsel. It's also tough to say whether Becky herself decided to leave Adnan out of the conversation and whether it was just a matter of the way she was questioned, because it's entirely possible that both things happened. Becky heard Hay tell Adnan she couldn't give him a ride, and she also told her that she had somewhere else to be.
So is there reason to believe that Becky has the right day? Absolutely. Unlike Inez and Summer tying their memory to the wrestling match that didn't take place that day, Becky ties her memory to the ride request at the heart of this case. Specifically, Becky remembers their friend group talking at lunch about Adnan asking Hay for a ride that day, which is why it makes sense that Hay would later say she couldn't give Adnan a ride because something had come up. And indeed, Becky confirmed all this when Sarah Koenig showed Becky her police statement on the Serial podcast.
Heard about it at lunch. So it's, I think you heard about it at lunch.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Hay said she could. There would be no problem. At end of school, I saw them. She said, "Oh no, I can't take you. I have something else to do." She didn't say what else. Approximately 2:20. So that happened at approximately 2:20. He said, "Okay, I'll just ask someone else." He told her goodbye. And then she says, "Did not see Hay after that."
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. It kind of all comes back a little bit.
So that seems pretty solid. But what if Becky's remembering another day? Well, then that means the day that Adnan asked Hay for a ride wasn't January 13th in the first place, and the state's entire case falls apart. Beyond that, though, Becky has corroborated. Specifically, I spoke with Krista, another friend of both Adnan and Hay. Krista says she spoke on the phone with Aisha on the night that Hay disappeared. Aisha was another friend of both Hay and Adnan, and another student at that AP psychology class. According to Krista, Aisha told her on the night that Hay disappeared that she had also overheard Hay telling Adnan at the end of the school day that she couldn't give him a ride because something had come up. Overall, then, this seems like solid proof that Becky and Aisha were the last innocent people to see Hay alive. Presumably, the two of them were together after AP psychology class, saw Hay tell Adnan she couldn't give him a ride because something had come up, and then saw Hay walking away from Adnan to the door leading to her car, never to be seen again. And if that's right, my theory remains that the something that had come up for Hay was a person who got her to change her plans, and who in fact is the person who killed her.
But what if both Becky and Aisha are wrong? Who then is the true last innocent person to see Hay alive?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, this takes us all the way back to when Hay's body was found and what the police and press were reporting to the public.
Lee was last seen at school January 13th at 3 o'clock driving her family's Nissan Sentra.
So who was the person who said she saw Hay at about 3 p.m.? That would be Debbie, another friend of Hay and Adnan's at Woodlawn High School. In a statement on January 28, 1999, Debbie told the police that she saw Hay at about 3 p.m. on January 13th. According to Debbie, Hay was by herself, inside the school, by the gym. Specifically, Debbie says that Hay told her, quote, that she was going to see Donald at the mall. This, of course, is referring to Don, Hay's boyfriend, on January 13th. Simply put, if Debbie's right, this is really bad for any case against Don. First, Debbie has Hay's plan as going to see Don. Second, based on how long it took Hay to drive to pick up her cousin after school, there's no way she would have had time to give Adnan a ride anywhere if this conversation with Debbie happened at around 3 p.m. because the cousin pickup was between 3:15 and 3:20, and Hay would have needed to drive straight there to make it in time if she left Woodlawn at around 3. This in turn takes us to Debbie's second police statement and another possible person as the last innocent person to see Hay alive. In this second police statement on March 26, 1999, Debbie now says she saw Hay between 2:45 and 3:15 p.m. in the Woodlawn lobby. But now, Debbie says that Hay was not alone. Instead, Debbie says that Hay was talking to Takara, another student at Woodlawn High School. And according to Debbie, Takara was asking Hay for a ride, and Hay told Takara that she couldn't give her a ride because she had to pick up her cousin and didn't have time to give anyone a ride.
Now, readers of my blog know that I went down a deep Takara rabbit hole back in the day, trying to figure out who she was and whether she had significance to this case. As a refresher, here's what I found. First, according to a seating chart that was provided to the police, Takara was the student who sat right next to Haman Lee in that final period AP psychology class that was taken by Becky and Aisha as well. Second, after Hay's body was found, a crisis intervention team went to the school to talk with grieving students and staff. In Debbie's police statement, she talks about the people who went to see this team in the wake of Hay's body being found. According to Debbie, the people who went were herself, Aisha, Becky, Hope Shab, Takara, and Takara's sister. So we've already mentioned Aisha and Becky. Hope Shab, you might recall, was the French teacher at the school. You might remember her from Cyril and Undisclosed. She was the teacher who was quasi-deputized by the Woodlawn police and went around trying to gather information about the case from the students, including giving them a questionnaire to answer. And then we have Takara and her sister. As I noted at the time, it was really tough to track down Takara because Takara is not a real name. But given how central Hope Shab was to the state's investigation, and given that she went with Takara to the crisis intervention team, the Baltimore police must have known who Takara was, or at a minimum, they easily could have found out. And if they did, why wouldn't they have spoken to her? She sat right next to Hay in their final period class. The witness they thought was the last innocent person to see Hay alive, Debbie, said she came upon a conversation between Hay and Takara, meaning that Takara might actually have been the last innocent person to see Hay alive. Plus, Takara was asking Hay for a ride in Debbie's accounting. And yet there's no record she was ever interviewed. Well, thankfully, we were finally able to put the pieces together and figure out who Takara is. And no, her real name isn't Takara, but we'll keep using that name because there doesn't seem to be a reason to air it in this podcast. But there was a reason to send a private investigator to talk with Takara, which is what we did. And here's the report he produced after talking with her.
I left a card at the front door of Takara's presumed residence. A few hours later, she called me and we spoke for 32 minutes. Unfortunately, Takara could not recall key aspects of Hay's going missing. Takara was cooperative, but she remained cautious and would not provide a phone number. She blocked the number when she called me. I described who I was working for. Legal trust working on Adan's behalf in anticipation of possible retrial and what my role was, reinvestigation of the case, and I encouraged her to review my website and check my card for my various PI license numbers as a way to establish my credentials. Since she would not give me her phone number, I offered to send her a letter if I had follow-up questions, and she readily agreed that was acceptable. She also noted that she would probably try and reach out to Deborah Warren through social media. She has not kept in contact with her. I requested that she tell Deborah and anyone else she might reach out to, e.g. Aisha, who I am, so that if I contact them, it would serve as an introduction of sorts, and she agreed. I also asked her to email me if she is successful in reaching anyone and if she recalled anything in the coming days, weeks, and she said she would. Interview. Takara recalled the murder case of both Hay and Adnan. She said she was aware they had a relationship, but she was not aware of details, such as whether they had broken up or if Hay had a new boyfriend, e.g. she could not recall Hay mentioning Don. Takara described herself in so many words as someone who was somewhat out of the loop at Woodlawn. She said that Hay, Aisha, and Deborah Warren were in French class together, and in fact, they were part of a group of five students who were to have traveled to France. After Hay's murder, it left only four of them. Takara could not recall interacting with Hay on the day she went missing. When I noted the police files indicated that Deborah Warren had told police that Takara had asked Hay for a ride on the day Hay went missing, Takara was surprised. I noted that Deborah had described her talking with Hay and Takara and possibly another person after school when Takara asked Hay for the ride. Takara said that it was possible that she had been part of the group talking because those were people she would have talked with, but she could not recall asking Hay for a ride. Takara also noted that she did not believe that she had any after-school activities around that time of year. Takara did not socialize with Hay outside of school, and she could not recall ever asking Hay for a ride. Takara could not recall what kind of car Hay had, nor could she recall ever having been inside of Hay's car. Takara said she was never interviewed by the police or prosecutors. Takara could not recall speaking to her French teacher or school counselors or psychologists about Hay's case. She does recall being part of a group that was called to the school's office to be notified about Hay's death. She said Adnan put his arm around her neck to console her. Takara could not recall any rumors or gossip about Hay's case either before or after Adnan's arrest. She said it was possible she discussed the case with Deborah Warren, but she could not recall details or a specific conversation. Takara noted that a week prior to Hay being found, she had a dream that Hay was in Lincoln Park, where Takara plays tennis, under leaves. Takara told her mom about her dream after Hay was found. She said she had not been told anything that would have led her to have such a dream, again noting that people did not really talk to her because she was a nerd. Takara said she continues to have such premonitions and dreams about things in her life. Takara could not recall anything about the case that caused her to suspect anyone or even Adnan. She could not recall any event, conversation, or encounter with Hay, Adnan, or anyone else that caused her concern, either at the time or since. She did note that she was surprised when Adnan was arrested for the murder.
And so, all of this seems like a dead end. Could Takara have been lying to the PI? Sure. Could her memory of something significant have faded over the course of a couple of decades? Absolutely. But it certainly seems like she has nothing useful to add to this case because Debbie either has a false memory or is thinking of a different day. And as we've reported before, there are plenty of reasons to think that Debbie is remembering a different day. Woodlawn had A days and B days in their schedule, with Debbie remembering all of this happening on an A day, whereas January 13th was a B day. Debbie remembers Hay wearing clothes that were not the clothes Hay wore on January 13th. And like Inez in Summer, Debbie ties her memory of January 13th to Hay saying she was going to a wrestling match, which we know didn't take place in that day. In the end, while Takara seems like a dead end, that's in some ways a good thing. It now seems clear that Inez, Summer, and Debbie all have the wrong day. And this further strengthens the conclusion that Becky and Aisha were the last innocent people to see Hay alive. And of course, both of them remember seeing Hay and Adnan walking in different directions, with Hay telling Adnan she couldn't give him a ride because something had come up. Given this, we now seem to have a pretty clear sequence of events. AP psychology class ends with a final bell. Becky and Aisha leave that class and then see Adnan and Hay going their separate ways after Hay says something's come up and she can't give him a ride. But beyond that, there was yet another student at AP psychology class who was mentioned by Debbie in her police interview. And this takes us to Anne and the second part of this episode.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Anne is another one of my deep dives in this case. She's the last thing we know about Adnan's day on January 13th, 1999. If you take a look at Adnan's call log, the last call on January 13th is at 10:30 p.m. It's an outgoing call to Anne that lasts 1 minute and 44 seconds and pings cell tower L651C, the tower that covers Adnan's house.
So, who is Anne? She comes up twice in Debbie's March 26 police interview. First, Debbie says that Adnan, she, and Anne would regularly go to the library during lunch to talk and read magazines. Second, and more importantly, Debbie says that a police sergeant was telling Anne a lot of information about the Heyman Lee case. That's a pretty interesting revelation, if true. Adnan's case file is pretty big, and various people have spoken to various Woodlawn witnesses throughout the years. All of them have noted they were pretty much in the dark about what the authorities thought and were relying on the rumor mill for information. So why would Anne, of all people, be in constant communication with a police sergeant who was telling her all about the case? Is this another case of Debbie getting things wrong? The answer is no. Debbie got this one right, with Anne confirming it herself. So, who is Anne and what is her story? The first reference to Anne in Adnan's case file is on March 2, 1999, 2 days after Adnan was arrested. The records show that Anne was interviewed by the police at Woodlawn on that date. Putting that in context, this makes it seem like Anne was a hugely important witness. Krista, who we've previously mentioned, was interviewed on March 1st, the day after Adnan was arrested. Then on March 2nd, there were three additional witnesses interviewed: Aisha, Debbie, and Anne. Obviously, Aisha, Debbie, and Krista are all crucial to this case. But what about Anne? This was a question posed to Adnan by his defense team, leading to the following written response by Adnan. Anne, classmate in psychology, knows about me and Hay, asked for my cell phone number, and she would call me, but I couldn't call her back because she used to date a Muslim guy named Abid, someone whom I know. The fact that these two had dated, I really didn't want to have anything to do with her outside of school. She has a very troubled past, childhood abuse, torn family, etc. What would she say? So yeah, Adnan had the same question as us, while also providing a seeming explanation of the 10:30 p.m. call on January 13th. Adnan was giving Anne his new cell phone number. But returning to Adnan and our question, what would Anne say about this case that would have any relevance, let alone enough relevance to have her be one of the first two people interviewed? And the short answer is that we don't know, because there are no notes from this March 2nd interview of Anne in the state file.
The plot then thickened when we got additional documents from the case file. As you might recall, a request was made under the Maryland Public Information Act, or MPIA, for documents related to this case, producing thousands of documents. These all came in PDF form. But then someone else did an MPIA request and got a response in Lotus Notes. And lo and behold, in these Lotus Notes, we realized there was not one interview of Anne, but two. Specifically, her interviews tracked Debbie's. On March 2nd, both spoke to the police at Woodlawn High School. But then, on March 26th, both went to the police station for recorded interviews, again underscoring how important Anne clearly was for the cops. After all, why bring Anne down to the police station and record a second interview with her unless she has something significant to say? Specifically, here's what the document written by Detective McGillivary says. On 26 March 1999, Your investigator, along with Detective William F. Ritz, had the occasion to respond to 1801 Woodlawn Drive, Woodlawn High School, and transport Debbie Warren and Anne to Woodlawn Precinct, Baltimore County Police Department. Both individuals were interviewed as to their knowledge of the above-stated homicide. After taped statements were taken, both witnesses were transported back to school respectively. Investigation to continue. So you might wonder, where is this recorded interview? And the simple answer is, the state says they don't have it. Debbie's interview? Sure. There's both a transcription of the interview and an audio recording that was played in part in the serial podcast. But Anne's interview? They have nothing. No transcription, no recording, no notes about anything that Anne said during this interview. Anne is the biggest black hole in this case. Two police interviews, no indication of what she said. So what was it that she told the police? Well, luckily, we were finally able to figure out Anne's identity and track her down. Anne isn't actually her name, but we're again going to use that name to maintain her anonymity. Anyway, Susan was eventually able to speak with her, and here's a summary of what Anne said. First, as Adnan noted, she was in a serious relationship with a guy named Abed, whom Adnan knew. As Adnan notes, this was the reason he didn't want to hang out with Anne much outside of school, because of his friendship with Abed and the guy code. After breaking up with Abed, Anne then began a, quote, thing with a guy named Aziz. Anne used the word thing because Aziz refused to be exclusive with her, but she did see him quite a bit. Anne knew that both Aziz and Abed were friends with Jay, and that Aziz and Abed were also friends with Adnan. Going outside of Anne's interview, there's an early document from the state's files that includes both Aziz and Abed on the list of witnesses the police plan to contact. Presumably, this is from Anne putting them on the radar, but there's no record that anyone ever interviewed either of them. That's not to say there were no other references to Aziz in the state's file. Instead, we have witnesses saying that Aziz was much closer to Jay than Adnan, and we even have a note in the defense files in which Adnan tells his team about Jay and Aziz stealing a canoe. And then there's the state's interview with Jay's girlfriend Stephanie, who says that Aziz was, quote, shady. Speaking of Jay and Stephanie, Anne says she didn't know Jay well. Specifically, while she knew of him, she couldn't remember his name. But she did know that he was tall, possibly a grade older, and that he dated the, quote, pretty black girl with blonde hair in our class. In other words, Stephanie. Anne actually appears once in serial proper, in episode 8, The Deal with Jay. It's in the part where Woodlawn students are describing what Jay looks like.
Yeah, he was like the Rodman of our, like, social world.
He was like the one black kid who had like a lip ring and listened to like Rage Against the Machine, and you know,
he would dye his hair different colors. Like, I think one time he had it red and another time he had a blonde, but the blonde lasted for a long time. Like, I remember the blonde for sure.
I remember he had a BMX belt buckle, and he had a belt buckle. Like, who the hell had a belt buckle?
Basically, Dennis Rodman is the best way I can describe it.
So that's what Anne had to say about Jay, but what did she have to say about Aziz? According to Anne, one time she was at Aziz's apartment and someone started banging on the door. Aziz told her it was his father, but Anne wonders whether that was true. Aziz told her to hide in the closet because he was Muslim and didn't want his dad to know he had a girl over. Anne complied and went into the closet. While in there, she says that she saw Aziz had guns and what she believed to be grenades. Once the visitor left, Anne came out and asked Aziz about what she'd seen in the closet. This then takes us to the part of the story where we want to emphasize that we're just repeating what Anne said, with Anne herself questioning its veracity. According to Anne, Aziz told her that on weekends, they would travel to places and, quote, take care of people, kill people. And no, Anne didn't specify who they were, i.e. who did these killings with Aziz. But Aziz did specify Pennsylvania and D.C. as the sites of some of these killings. Aziz wouldn't tell Anne why he did this or which people he'd killed, but when she was asking him about what he meant, he said that he'd killed one woman, but that killing women wasn't the usual type of job they did. Obviously, this raises a red flag given that Haman Lee was murdered. But no, we don't know whether the statement was made before or after January 13, 1999. Anyway, Anne wasn't sure whether to believe this, but she was scared by what Aziz said. She also added that when 9/11 happened later, her first thought was that maybe Aziz had been involved in that. But she was also quick to add that, quote, maybe the story about killing people was just something he made up for some reason. Anne also added that she had never seen Aziz around any drugs, but she said that, quote, he always seemed to have more money than you'd expect. This then takes us to Adnan's arrest. Anne says she went to the police shortly after Adnan was arrested because she thought the police would want to know about Aziz saying he had killed people. This would have been her March 2nd police interview. During that interview, she told the cops all about Aziz and Abid. Now, it's unclear what she told the police about Abid, but whatever it was, the police clearly were interested in it because, as we noted, both Aziz and Abid are included in an early police list of people that they want to interview. Then, according to Anne, after that first interview, at 4 a.m. one night, Aziz called her house and asked her to come down and get in his car. She did. Aziz then drove her through a wooded area. He started acting really weird, making her terrified. She somehow got the sense this was about Hay's death, so she asked Aziz if that's what this was about. In response, Aziz insisted angrily that he didn't know who Adnan was or have anything to do with him. Eventually, Aziz took her back home. She said she'd been pretty traumatized by this encounter, and she did tell the police about it. And yep, that takes us back to the episode one teaser where Anne said this.
Basically threatened me, like, you know what happened to Hay, this is what's going to happen to you. That's how I felt that day.
So we now know that Anne didn't just tell Sarah Koenig about Aziz basically threatening her. She told this to the police as well. Specifically, during her recorded March 26th interview, with that recording now mysteriously missing. So what else did Anne say during her interview? We can't say anything with 100% certainty, but while Anne had no first-hand knowledge of Hay's murder, this was what she relayed as her general understanding of what had happened until she was contacted by Sarah Koenig for Serial. According to Anne, she thought that Hay had been on her way to pick up, quote, her brother, when Adnan and, quote, Adnan's black friend, the one with the Dennis Rodman hair I mentioned, drove up, presumably to Woodlawn, and Adnan eventually persuaded her to get in the car with them, insisting that it, quote, wouldn't take long. Jay was driving the car, and Adnan and Hay were in the back seat together. They began arguing when Hay wouldn't agree to get back together with him or something, and in a fit of rage, he snapped slash crushed her neck and killed her. There was something about a trunk involved, and Adnan and Jay went to, quote, Druid Hill Park or whatever, and tried to bury her, but only got halfway through the burial before they heard sirens and freaked out and left. Later, after all this evidence was shown to him, Adnan confessed to the crime, and that's why he was sentenced to life in prison. Now, obviously, there's information here that's demonstrably false, like Hay being on the way to pick up her brother instead of her cousin, and clearly, Anne was also relaying information she had picked up during different periods of time, like her statement about why Adnan was given a life sentence, which also, of course, is false because Adnan didn't and has never confessed. But for me, the most interesting part of this story that Anne believed was that Jay was driving a car at Woodlawn with Adnan in the back seat and Adnan getting Hay into that car where he killed her. Obviously, this story makes no sense in the context of the state's theory of the case. That theory was that Adnan loaned Jay his car so he could get a ride from Hay and kill her in her own car. Anne's story has Adnan in the backseat of his own car, goading Hay into the car to talk with her and then killing her when she didn't say what he wanted. You can't really reconcile the two. Which would be exactly why the state wouldn't want the defense to know Anne's story, especially if it could be traced back to Jay. Because if Jay was going around telling this story that he was there when Adnan killed Hay at Woodlawn High School, rather than the Best Buy, well, that would be huge grounds for impeaching his credibility, something much more significant than changing the location of the trunk pop.
So is there other evidence that Jay's initial version of events was a story about Adnan snapping and strangling Hay at Woodlawn, rather than Best Buy, based on her new boyfriend and not wanting to get back together with Adnan? The answer is yes, and this takes us back to episode 8 of Serial, The Deal with Jay. In it, host Sarah Koenig spoke with Jay's friend Chris, who says that this was what Jay told him about the murder of Heyman Lee.
Chris's information about the crime itself doesn't quite match the state's version. He said Jay told him that Adnan confronted Hay about flirting with another guy, a car salesman, and when she called Adnan crazy, he snapped and strangled her. And Chris said he heard this happen in the parking lot of the Woodlawn Public Library. Remember, that's the one that's right there on campus. where Asia said she saw Adnan that day.
Now, while we heard this story on Serial, the jurors never heard it. Why? Chris was never interviewed by the police, despite Jay saying he was the only friend he told about the murder. That was another big focus of Episode 8 of Serial, Sarah Koenig speaking to former homicide detective Jim Trainum about the police avoiding bad evidence. If Chris could tell the cops about Jay's initial version of events, that totally contradicts the state's story. That could really damage their case, because you'd have to turn over Chris's police interview, and the defense could cross-examine Jay at trial about why this story started totally differently than the one he was telling at trial. But by the police not interviewing Chris, there was no bad evidence, nothing to turn over. On the other hand, the police did interview Anne twice, and the second one is recorded. There's no good reason that there's not a record of what she said. But if it's similar to what she said to Susan, it makes sense. The state didn't want the defense knowing that Jay's initial version of events involved the murder taking place by Woodlawn High School. Maybe more importantly, they didn't want the defense to know that Jay's first story involved Jay himself being at Woodlawn shortly after school ended. Actually, that's not entirely true, because the defense did know this in some sense. In the pre-interview notes to Jay's first official police interview, Jay told the police that at 3 p.m. on January 13th, his friend Jeff took Jay to Woodlawn High School, where he met his girlfriend Stephanie in the back parking lot. The end of those notes have Jay coming clean and admitting to some version of the state story, where he's at his friend Jen's house the whole afternoon before Adnan calls him to be picked up at Best Buy. In fact, this is one of the very few places where Jay and Jen's stories line up. They're adamant that Jay was at Jen's house until 3:45 p.m. on January 13th, which of course doesn't fit with the state's timeline, but does place Jay far away from Woodlawn.
Except Jay himself now says this story isn't true, and that something like what he said in his pre-interview is in fact the truth. In episode 4 of the HBO documentary, The Case Against Adnan Syed, we're told about a new phone conversation with Jay. And according to Jay, his trial testimony was false. Instead, Jay says he tried to return Adnan's car at Woodlawn after school on January 13th, but couldn't find him and left. When this aired, the fallout was clear. Everyone knew the state's narrative was dead, and that nothing Jay or Jen said could be trusted. Jay's new admission doesn't tell us who killed Heyman Lee, but it does tell us the story the jury was sold was in fact not true. And if the recording of Anne's interview had been turned over, the defense could have dismantled the state's narrative in a similar way. So where would Anne have learned Jay's claim that he was at Woodlawn and in fact driving Adnan's car when he snapped and killed Hay in the backseat? Clearly not a Z is based upon the incident that Anne described. Anne herself barely knew Jay, and there's nothing from Debbie suggesting this came from her. Well, this takes us back to Debbie's comment that a police sergeant was telling Anne a lot of information about this case. Anne confirmed this, although she said to Susan it was a detective. According to Anne, she had at least two formal interviews with the police. But she also added, a detective gave her his phone number, and they continued communicating about the case. To me, this feels like a big WTF moment. Which detective was this? Ritz? McGillivary? And why was he staying in contact with Anne after her interviews and giving her a blow-by-blow of what they were doing? It's impossible to say. What we do know are two things. One, Anne has a version of the story that completely contradicts the state's version of events at trial and that could have drastically damaged the theory of the case at trial. Second, a huge motivation for Anne talking to the police was thinking that Aziz could have killed Hay, which is certainly evidence of yet another alternate suspect. Now, was there enough evidence for the defense to point the finger at him at trial? Again, it's impossible to know because we have nothing from either of Anne's police interviews. What we do know is the recurring theme for these episodes so far. Ivan Bates has said he's open to new evidence in this case. And unless it's been destroyed, there should be evidence of two Anne interviews somewhere in the state's files, and finding them could be the key to cracking this case. But what if there were also evidence in the defense files that could paint a very different picture of what happened the hour after school ended on January 13th? And what if it could completely change what we think about what happened all the way back in 1999? Next time on Undisclosed.
Psst.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect for breakfast. Like buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for a dollar. Get more than you expect with new McValue at McDonald's.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Hi, this is for everyone involved with Undisclosed Pod. My name is Jewel. I am an OG listener since the Serial, after Serial days. I just wanted to say you guys are so awesome and thank you so much for all you do. You inspired me so much and, you know, I've been on a journey to get to law school myself because of the awesome work that you guys have done and do. And I just really appreciate y'all. And I'm so glad that you have a new season coming up, and we're so glad to see justice for Adnan and his family and everyone, just the Innocence Project and just everything that you guys are involved with. We just are so grateful for you. Have a great day. Bye.
Hey guys, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Want to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production and Animal Weapon for our theme music. This time around, we're doing something different. You can leave us questions, comments, thoughts, and suggestions in a voice note, and we might even play it on air. Just go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed and start recording. For those of you that want to engage on social media, you can follow, share, and like us on all the different platforms. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. For folks on X, we're still at Undisclosed Pod. Also, please go to subscribe to our new YouTube channel at Undisclosed Pod so you don't miss out on any content there. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you want to follow Colin and Rabia on social media as well, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram, and Colin is at EvidenceProf on Instagram and Blue Sky. Thanks for your continued support for us and for our sponsors. Until next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.